This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
Will it be Oppenheimer? Will it be Barbie? Will it be some other story entirely? It's time to get down to business because the Oscars are upon us.
We're talking about actors, directors, best pictures, and everything we think will and should win. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Linda Holmes. On this episode of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we're offering up a guide to this year's Oscars. Joining us today are our fellow Pop Culture Happy Hour hosts, Stephen Thompson. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Linda.
And Aisha Harris. Hello, Aisha.
Hey, Linda.
Well, I'm so glad to be here with all of you for our big Oscars show. We have all seen all of the nominees we're going to be talking about today. We think it's a pretty good year for movies. I think we will all find ourselves agreeing on that. First, we are obviously going to spend some time on Best Picture. And there were some wide-ranging nominees this year, but some themes emerged among our 10 nominees. Stephen, why don't you kick us off?
Well, first up, we had Barbenheimer face off at the box office this past summer, and now they're facing off in the Best Picture race. That's Barbie. Director Greta Gerwig crafts an extremely self-aware vision of Barbie with commentary on the patriarchy and the unreasonable expectations placed on women in society.
Hi, Barbie. Hi, Barbie. Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
That clip was not entirely indicative of everything that happens in Barbie.
It's true.
Also, you have Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan's film about the brilliant physicist who oversaw the construction of the first atomic bomb at a secret military base in the New Mexico desert.
And now I am become death, destroyer of worlds.
It's a little contrast. It's just a little contrast. The Oscars are a land of contrast. Hi, Barbie. I am become death.
And the thing is, so many people did a double feature of those films,
right?
And came away very happy.
Psychic whiplash.
It's true. And we've also got some lovely character-driven dramas in this category. Aisha, why don't you tell us about this group?
Yeah, so first we have The Holdovers, Alexander Payne's Surprisingly Warm. I really enjoy this film, about a curmudgeonly boarding school professor who has to look after students during Christmas break, and he forms a bond with one kid who's a huge pain in the butt.
Need I remind you that it is not my fault that you are stuck here? Do you think I want to be babysitting you?
There's also American Fiction, which is the feature directorial debut of Court Jefferson. That one is about a black author who begrudgingly writes a novel filled with antiquated stereotypes.
They want a black book.
They have a black book. I'm black, and it's my book.
You know what I mean. And then there is Past Lives, Celine Song's film about a woman who's played by Greta Lee. And she reconnects with her childhood sweetheart, tries to understand both the path she took and the paths she didn't take.
It means there must have been something between them in their past lives.
Oh, I get it. That's the title of the movie. All right.
Yeah, right there, pointing at the screen like Leonardo DiCaprio.
What a lovely cluster of films.
I know.
It's true. Next up, we have a group of nominees that feel like kind of traditional Oscar contenders. They have pretty clear ties to past nominees. Glenn, I'm going to put you in charge of these.
Sure. We got Killers of the Flower Moon. This is director Martin Scorsese's epic film. It's based on a true story. It tracks the suspicious murders of members of the Osage Nation in 1920s Oklahoma after they find oil under their tribal land.
Oh, you just called me a coyote, didn't you?
Coyote wants money.
Next up, Maestro, an old Hollywood-style biopic about the composer and conductor Leonard Bernstein, directed and co-written by and starring Bradley Cooper. I think he also did Craft Services.
Wouldn't you say, whether it's composing it or conducting it or teaching it or studying it or playing it, as long as it's music, I like it and I do it.
And then we've got Poor Things, director Yorgos Lanthimos' dark comedy about a young woman in Victorian London who was found and experimented upon by a twisted scientist.
So Bella's so much to discover, and you're... sad face makes me discover angry feelings for you.
And last, we've got two international films. We've been seeing more foreign language nominees since the Best Picture race expanded to 10 films. And the two we have this year are Anatomy of a Fall, directed by Justine Triet. This French drama follows a wife who becomes the chief suspect when her husband is found dead. Rifts in their marriage, shall we say, are exposed.
Stop. I did not kill him.
That's not the point.
And The Zone of Interest is Jonathan Glazer's film about the commandant of Auschwitz, as well as his wife and children. They live in an idyllic house and garden next to the concentration camp. So those are the 10 nominees. I want to try something. On the count of three, we're going to say what we think is going to win Best Picture. Okay. Mm-hmm. One, two, three.
Oppenheimer. Become Death.
Super Mario Brothers movie.
All right.
Steven.
You guys are really ruining my fun.
No. Right.
The point here.
Oppenheimer.
It's Oppenheimer.
Yes, yes.
Hell, you guys are going to have to calm down. I'm gonna have to go the holdovers on you and get very disciplinarian. We all four of us agree that Oppenheimer is likely to win Best Picture.
Yes.
Steven, what makes you think this is going to be the winner?
What makes me think Oppenheimer will win Best Picture? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a historical drama. It's an epic film. Christopher Nolan has been making big, very ambitious movies for years and years and years. This feels like a culminating Best Picture capstone on his career. Not that it's his, you know, final film or anything. It checks all those big Oscar boxes. And I think one of the boxes that it most checks is it's an extremely excellent film.
Sure.
It is the kind of film that I often enter award season going, ugh, Oppenheimer. Oh, no, it's the three-hour historical epic. Mm. But it is extremely entertaining. It is extremely gripping. It's so well acted. It has, you know, absolutely everybody in it. I don't necessarily think that every performance that is nominated is deserving of a win. We'll get to that later.
We'll get there.
I think this movie just feels like a consensus pick, and it doesn't seem like the kind of movie that is anybody's 10th favorite of this field, right?
Sure.
Right.
And so if you're submitting like a ranked choice ballot, you're not going to have Oppenheimer at the bottom. Even if you have a different movie that you're really pulling for,
sure,
you can accept this is a great film. It makes sense for it to win Best Picture.
Yeah, and it's interesting that Christopher Nolan was the guy who changed the Best Picture race when The Dark Knight was not nominated the year it came out. Mm-hmm. The next year, they expanded the Best Picture category from 5 movies to as many as 10. And that was done, I think, to get audiences more invested in the Oscar race. You single out the films that were just as popular with filmgoers as they were with critics. So this year, it's ironic in the Alanis Morissette sense, you know, he's finally going to win an Oscar for a film that probably would have won him an Oscar in a 5 nominee category, because it's exactly the kind of film that Academy voters flock to. It's a historical biopic.
Yeah, to that point, I think it's just flat out. I think the fact that it did so well at the box office, I think it was the third highest grossing film behind Barbie and Super Mario Brothers. Mm-hmm. And so you can't discount that either, because at the end of the day, these are all people in the industry, and anything that can signal like the movies are back, even if that's not really true. Mm-hmm. It's just this movie was back and Barbie was.
This movie was back.
Well, especially like a quote-unquote serious movie that does big box office, as opposed to something like Barbie or Super Mario Brothers, which are serious or can be serious in terms of filmmaking, but they, you know, they don't have the kind of heft. Aisha, although we all agree about what will win Best Picture, it's a stacked list of nominations and we don't all agree on what should win Best Picture. What do you think should win Best Picture?
I mean, this was hard for me because I really did love a lot of movies in this category. But for me, Anatomy of a Fall is probably the one that I would be really happy to see win. As you know, as much as I loved Killers of the Flower Moon, I think this movie, it hits every note right for me. And it's the type of film that I think will reward repeat viewings. And, you know, Sandra Hüller, she is fantastic.
Yeah.
From her to the dog to the kid who plays the son, like all the performances here are just working together.
The music supervision in this film is so on point.
P-I-M-P.
All right, Stephen, what do you think?
What I'm going to go with for should, I mean, I just loved Poor Things. Mm. I thought Poor Things was so eccentric in the best way. It's an incredible movie to look at. It has a wonderful score. It is very largely acted. All the performances are very, very, very big, but in a way that I just really hooked into. I understand that this is a polarizing film. I know people who despise it.
Yeah.
But I'm very much on the team with people who think this movie is just a hoot and a half from start to finish.
Yeah, I'm on your same team, Stephen. That's what I picked for Should.
Yeah.
Can I sit here and say it's the best film of the year? No, there is some pacing issues. It kind of lags in the middle.
Sure.
But it sure is my favorite. I love a weirdo. I'm boating with my heart.
Yeah. It was a great movie. I loved it too.
Yeah. I get that. I liked Poor Things. I like basically all the films in this field. I went with Past Lives, which I think is, you know, Glenn talked about he loves a weirdo. I love a love story. Mm-hmm. And I think as much as this is a love story about this woman and her childhood sweetheart and kind of what their relationship is like, it's also really a love story about her and her husband and how they manage the fact of her life before they met. And I just found it so moving. And there are so many fabulous scenes in this film that I think are so touching. And I think it could so easily have turned into a triangle, which isn't what it is. I just admired it enormously. And this Greta Lee performance is maybe my favorite performance of the year.
Fantastic.
I just think she's such a star. And so I went with Past Lives. And I want to talk next about the director's race. Aisha, who do we have in this category?
Yeah, so we have Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall, Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things, Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest, Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, and Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer.
Yeah, Christopher Nolan is heavily favored, I would say, to win in this category. He's picked up the BAFTA and the Directors Guild Award already. I'm going to start with Glenn. Why do you think he's going to win? Which is another one, by the way. We all agreed that he is the will-win pick. Glenn, what made him your will-win pick?
Because the buzz is there, because there's a certain inevitability this year to an Oppenheimer sweep. And for all the reasons you mentioned, he swept the BAFTAs and a lot of the local critics awards as well. I just think it's his time.
Yeah.
This is that category where it's like, it's time.
Historically, this is often a career achievement award by a certain point, especially when somebody hasn't won before. And it's kind of surprising that Christopher Nolan has never won Best Director.
Yeah.
I could make a case for, I think, anybody else in this category, but I think he's basically as close to a sure thing as you get.
Yeah. This is another no bad choices category for me. Yeah. I'm so pleased to see everybody on this list. I would have really appreciated seeing Celine Song, who directed Past Lives, on this list. People have talked a lot about Greta Gerwig not being on this list, but I did go not only with Christopher Nolan for Will Win, but also Christopher Nolan for Should Win, which I think will surprise maybe some people because I have not been a Christopher Nolan super fan necessarily.
Right.
You know, Glenn has sometimes talked about there is an emotional remoteness in some of his work, and that extends to this film in a way. There is an iciness to Oppenheimer, not just the film, but the character. You know, I realized that I was being campaigned to in a sense, but when I watched the kind of behind the scenes pieces about the making of this film, it really did give me an appreciation for the scale of the work that went into it and how unconventional the challenges were of making this film. And it's not to say that other people did not. I mean, listen, the challenges of making something like Poor Things or, you know, and the beauty, I really went back and forth because I do love Anatomy of a Fall and I do love the meticulous choreography of that film, particularly in the courtroom. But I went with Christopher Nolan. I'm going to go to Stephen. Tell me who you think should win in this category.
My should is Yorgos Lanthimos, a director I've really come to love. Somebody who has just such a distinctive directorial vision. And I'm just so intrigued and excited to see everything he does. And I just think this is such a deeply idiosyncratic vision. I definitely felt like no other director could have or would have made this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that I wouldn't necessarily say of these other films and their direction, as wonderful as the direction is in all five of these films, including The Zone of Interest, which we haven't talked about very much. But that is an extremely well-made movie that is gorgeous and very unsettling to look at and has one of the most intriguing pieces of sound design I have maybe ever seen in a film.
I'm on your team, Stephen, the Yorgos Lanthimos team, for this because, I mean, give me the goofy, right? This guy is changing Hollywood for the weirder. He is a visionary, as you say. And he can only make the film he makes. You're absolutely right. Try to slot this guy into a superhero film. See what you get. Actually, can we do that? I'd love to see that.
Yeah, that was a request. I do want to see it.
There is never anything schematic or overdetermined in his work, which is not something I can say for Nolan, right? So I think Nolan is super ego and Lanthimos is id. Mm-hmm. He is an agent of chaos. I love an agent of chaos as long as I'm not dating them.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. Aisha, how about you?
I mean, in any other year, I would probably be on the Lanthimos team, because I also am just a huge fan of his work. But for me, I'm going to go kind of align myself with my best picture pick, which is Justine Triet. I just think that the way she plays with perspective and point of view with this very complicated story and does it both visually and audibly and just creates all these layers of tension. I was from beginning to end just completely floored by what she was doing. Mm-hmm. I just think, again, this seems like a movie that I want to watch over and over as like also unsettling. Like all of these movies are unsettling in their own
in different ways.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I agree with you, Aisha, in the sense that I went back and sort of re-examined this film for a piece that I wrote for NPR about kind of the layout of the courtroom and the use of the courtroom. And it really gave me a fresh sense of how carefully constructed it is, how she's playing with perspective and what the truth is. And when you think about the fact that really, I don't think it's a spoiler to say, like, you know, ultimately she avoids giving you a very clear answer to what exactly happened in the sequence of events that is so central to the film. That's a really hard thing to pull off. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I went with Nolan, but it was, I'm back and forth about this one. And I think my second choice would also be Justine Triet. Well, let's move on to the lead actress category, which, you know, the interesting thing about this one is I think this is one of the few categories this year that a lot of experts and odds makers think it's still up in the air. Stephen, who's nominated in this category?
All right. Well, you've got Annette Bening for Naiad. Bening plays Diana Naiad, who swam from Cuba to Florida at the age of 64. Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall. Hüller plays Sandra, a woman who comes under suspicion when her husband is found dead. Carey Mulligan for Maestro. Mulligan plays Felicia Montalegre, the wife of composer Leonard Bernstein. And then we've got the two presumed frontrunners, Emma Stone for Poor Things. Stone plays Bella, a young woman found nearly lifeless and then experimented on by a twisted surgeon.
You're always reading now, Bella. You're losing some of your adorable way of speaking.
I'm a changeable feast, as are all of we. Apparently, according to Emerson, disagreed with by Harry.
Come, come, just come.
And Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon. Gladstone plays Molly Burkhart, a member of the Osage Nation in 1920s Oklahoma.
Storm, it's, well, it's powerful. So we need to be quiet for a while.
It's good for the crops, that's for sure.
Just be still.
It should be noted, Lily Gladstone is the first Native American acting nominee in this category, meaning she's the first actor in this category to hail from land now occupied by the United States.
All right. I have it on good authority, not through mind reading, but through intel, that we are divided on who should and will win in this one. Aisha, I'm going to start back with you. Tell me about lead actress. Who do you think will win lead actress?
I feel as though Emma Stone might get it. I just have this sense in me that, look, it's hard for people to win acting Oscars twice, but it does happen with some like relative frequently. Mm-hmm. Emma Stone already won for La La Land. And I do feel as though, you know, I don't want to get all political and presume people's politics and whatnot, but I do kind of feel this energy of like feminism and how like obviously a lot of people have critiqued this version of feminism or what is perceived as a meditation on some sort of feminist ideals. But I do feel as though like Emma Stone could take it. Mm-hmm. So I would be happy if she did, because I think she's doing some of the best work she's ever done in her career in this film. So I think that is who will win.
I said that last week when the kind of buzz was surrounding her. I think the pendulum is swinging more toward Lily Gladstone this week. And that is the polar opposite of the Gladstone performance. Her performance in Poor Things is big. It's risky. She's sticking her neck way, way out. But as you say, she's already got an Oscar. She's going to have plenty more chances to get another. I did also agree that she was going to win it last week, but I can't see the Academy passing up the chance to recognize an extremely deserving nominee that will also, oh, by the way, make history. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stephen, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I think I agree with Glenn. I think Lily Gladstone seems to have the momentum, and it is a wonderful performance, by the way, in a very, very, very good movie. We haven't talked that much about Killers of the Flower Moon. It just feels, I don't know, just ear to the ground vibes. I don't have really any evidence to back it up that it feels like Gladstone has a little bit of the edge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's Gladstone, too, for a lot of the reasons you guys have mentioned. Now, Stephen, I'm going to go directly back to you. Who do you think should win?
Well, and this is one where I, too, like the wins and vibes and all that, my pick goes back and forth between these two performances. And I ultimately came down, I got sucked in by the most acting of it all and went with Emma Stone. I think it is a wonderful performance. I think it's the best performance of her career in which she has already won a Best Actress trophy. It is a big and bold and wild and very strange performance. In a way, she kind of matches Yorgos Lanthimos's intensity and oddity, you know, and whereas Lily Gladstone's performance is more contained, it's quieter. That does not make it worse. It is a fantastic performance and a very good film. Ultimately, almost came down to a coin flip as far as who I would pick, and I came down on Stone.
Yeah, I come down on Lily Gladstone.
Yes.
Look, I'm not going to lie. I would love to see her become the first Native American acting winner in this category. That is, to me, it's not the end all, be it, like, because she obviously deserves it. But I also think for the role that she is playing and the fact that this is a very complicated role, there have been people, Native Americans, who have, you know, who have not necessarily loved this film. And I can totally understand their reservations about it. But for me, I just think I was drawn to what she was able to do with a role that maybe could have been gone further. And the fact that so much of this is her playing with her eyes.
Yeah.
She is way more complicated a character, I think, than the Bella character for Emma Stone. And I think the fact that she's able to nail this, for me, just puts it over the top. And I just really want to see Lily Gladstone, like, keep that momentum going and take it home.
Yeah, she's my should, too. She's a star because, right, what she's doing is she is calibrating that performance for the big screen. She seems impassive, but she's radiating strength and intelligence. And there's a risk that comes with that because when you have that much interiority, I was left with the question, well, why did she fall for the lump of human flesh that is DiCaprio's character, right? I mean, like, I don't quite get that. And I don't know if I lay that entirely at her feet. That could be screenplay, that could be directing, but that's the risk. It's a different kind of risk than Emma Stone's doing, but it's a risk.
Yeah, I came down for Lily Gladstone, too, in the should of this race, largely for what Aisha was talking about with how complex this character is. You know, just as much as you can go through Anatomy of a Fall and not be certain what to make of the Sandra Hüller character, I think you can get to the end of this film and not be certain exactly what she has understood at different times about what her husband is doing. So the complexity of that part, I think, tipped me over to her side. So up next, we will talk about more Oscar nominees, the lead actor plus supporting actor and actress. Grab your cheat sheets and come right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel. On The Sympathizer podcast, host Philip Nguyen joins the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen to discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. What's the right amount of socializing for you? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need more alone time. Therapy can help you figure out your boundaries, how to recharge, and your social sweet spot, so you can build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Try therapy with BetterHelp. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Visit BetterHelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month.
This message comes from Capital One, offering commercial solutions you can bank on. Now more than ever, your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services, all tailored to your short and long-term goals. Backed by the strength and stability of a top 10 commercial bank, their dedicated experts work with you to build lasting success. Explore the possibilities at CapitalOne.com/commercial. A member FDIC.
Welcome back. Let's dive right back in and talk about nominations for actor in a leading role. Glenn, who is nominated in this category?
Okay, you've got Bradley Cooper from Maestro. Cooper depicts the American composer Leonard Bernstein. You've got Colman Domingo for Rustin. Domingo plays Bayard Rustin, an openly gay black civil rights leader who dedicated his life to a quest for racial equality. Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers. Giamatti plays Paul Hunnam, a prickly boarding school professor who forms an unexpected bond with a student over Christmas break. You've got Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. Wright plays Thelonious Monk Ellison, an author who is disillusioned with the publishing industry and its expectations of black fiction. And finally, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer. Murphy depicts the real-life physicist J. Robert Oppenheimer, who oversaw construction of the first atomic bomb.
All right. Now we're going to try this again. And I would like all of you to try to behave yourselves, if you can. On three, we're all going to say who we think will win Best Actor. One, two, three.
Cillian Murphy.
Yep.
All right. Very good. Listen, everybody did great. Everybody did great. I have no complaints. So, Aisha, why do you think Cillian Murphy is going to win in this category?
Not to beat a dead horse, but like it just feels destined at this point. Ever since the film came out in July, this has just been the talk of the town. And I think he's kept that momentum going. There's obviously some very strong, I think all the performances in this category for the, most of the performances in this category are very, very strong. But I think it's Cillian's to lose at this point.
Yep. Stephen, you also had Cillian Murphy under should win. Tell me about that.
You know, Cillian Murphy is carrying the weight of that film and really carrying a lot of weight in general.
You're talking about turning theory into a practical weapon system faster than the Nazis.
It is a big performance, but it is also at the right time an extremely contained performance. Mm-hmm. His inscrutability works in the film's favor. And I just think that is an extremely strong performance. He's been a great actor for a really, really long time. So he also kind of brings that career achievement award quality to it. You could certainly say the same for Paul Giamatti and Jeffrey Wright, for sure. But I just think it's a great performance in a great film in what is really feeling like Oppenheimer's year. And so I think he checks both boxes of will and should win.
All right. Aisha, you did not pick him for should win. Who did you pick?
Yeah, look, I love a performer who can do everything with their eyes, and Cillian Murphy obviously is one of those performers. But for me, I really want to see Paul Giamatti win.
Well, he's doing a lot of work with his eyes in this film, too.
He is. I was so knocked out by this film because I came into it, I think, with pretty low expectations, and they were exceeded. I just fell in love with it. And I think this is the type of role, look, he plays a curmudgeon. He's cantankerous.
Yeah.
Giamatti could play this role in his sleep, but he plays it in his sleep so well. This, to me, also, as you already mentioned, Stephen, it could be seen as a career win. And I just would love to see him take it.
Yeah. Glenn, what'd you say?
Well, I couldn't pick between Jeffrey Wright and Paul Giamatti, so I picked both. It's a tie. It's happened before. It could happen again.
Cheating.
I know.
Cheating.
But look, both are playing prickly misanthropists. Mm-hmm. And as you say, Aisha, it's something Giamatti's done before. But he is so good here because he lets us see that this guy he's playing, that's all mannered, right? It's a pose. It's a protective shell. Obviously, he had a teacher like this guy, and he thinks he has to be that guy. Mm-hmm. But he's Giamatti, so he's bleeding humanity in every frame. And as for Wright, I mean, that guy makes everything better.
Yeah.
His character isn't adopting a pose of prickliness. He's just been beaten down. And my favorite thing about that film is how he changes depending on which member of his family he's talking to.
Yeah.
He shows a different side of himself to them, but they're all the same guy. He's just such a great listener, a great reactor, and that's why they should tie.
He was like right below for me.
Yeah.
It was Giamatti and then Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah, this is one of several categories in which there are multiple people I would be thrilled to see them win.
Yeah, this is a strong category. And there are a couple of performances here where I do want to give due admiration to the performance, even if the film was not necessarily as much my thing, particularly that Colman Domingo performance in Rustin. I think it has some issues dealing with the limitations of the historical drama format.
To say the least.
There's so much explaining and so much kind of on-the-nose statements of everything that is going on and is important. But there's so much truth in the Colman Domingo performance. I really admired that performance. And even honestly, like, look, Maestro was not my favorite of the Best Picture nominees, but I do think that Bradley Cooper performance, it's a very complete invention, mm-hmm. his version of Leonard Bernstein, and it doesn't feel like Bradley Cooper to me.
Well, there was a lot of makeup going on there.
But also in the manner and in the cadence of speaking and everything. It's not to say it's an impersonation and that's what makes it good, but I do respect what a complete creation I think that version of Leonard Bernstein is.
Yes.
I loved Jeffrey Wright. In American Fiction. I love Jeffrey Wright in everything. Mm-hmm. It was so funny when Jeffrey Wright popped up briefly
in Rustin.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
I thought, I know who that is, but I didn't place that it was Jeffrey Wright, even though I've been looking at Jeffrey Wright all Oscar season. He really has a kind of a transformative quality and can kind of disappear into these roles. But I also, like Aisha, I ultimately went for Paul Giamatti.
Oh,
and
yay.
Listen, how can Paul Giamatti not already have an Oscar? We've done something wrong, people.
He's lightly nominated. He's only been nominated once before.
Yeah, and I just think, as Aisha said, this performance seems, and I think I went in with somewhat lower expectations also, because I felt like this was going to be Alexander Payne doing the Alexander Payne thing and Paul Giamatti doing the Paul Giamatti thing. Mm-hmm. And yet it's such a layered film and it's such a layered performance. And it's so, the film is so kind to all of its characters. And Giamatti, to me, is so dead on in this performance and so understands what is needed from this character, which is not a warm and fuzzy redemption arc.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's something different and more interesting.
Thank God.
So that's where I come down on best actor. We're going to move on to actress in a supporting role. Aisha, who's nominated in this category?
So we have Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer. Blunt plays Kitty Oppenheimer, the wife of J. Robert Oppenheimer. It's a lot of Oppenheimer. Uh-huh. Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple. Brooks plays Sophia, and she also portrayed the character in the Broadway stage musical as well. Why are you so scared? I never know. But if a man raise his hand, hell no. America Ferrera, who plays Gloria, a disillusioned employee of Mattel who still believes in the magic of Barbies in Barbie. And Jodie Foster for Naiad. Foster plays Bonnie Stoll. She's a trainer and close friend of the long-distance swimmer Diana Naiad, who is played by Annette Bening. And finally, we have Davine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. She plays Mary, a boarding school cook who is grappling with the recent death of her son.
You don't tell a boy that's been left behind at Christmas that you're aching to cut him loose, that nobody wants him? What the f*** is wrong with you?
Yep, that is the movie that Aisha and I both love so much and have already talked about.
Yes.
And as it turns out, we are all in agreement here, fully in agreement here, that Davine Joy Randolph both will and should win in this category.
Yeah.
Aisha, look, you and I are the holdovers people, so I'm actually going to switch over and ask Glenn about this performance. What do you think, buddy?
I'm a holdovers guy, too. I mean, she makes this movie that hits a lot of very familiar story beats. Her presence, not just the character's presence, but this performance complicates this story in the best way. She is the heart of this movie, mm-hmm. but the warmth she brings to the movie isn't automatic. It's not reflexive. You have to earn it. She expects something of you. And that's why I love it. And that's why I love this performance.
Yeah. And she's picked up most of the sort of precursor awards and seems like she's sailing towards this win, which I think is great.
Yeah, she got SAG, so that's mm-hmm. promising.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, guess what? She's also in Rustin. Not for very long.
I was going to say.
I know.
I was going to say. She gets pretty high billing for appearing in Rustin for like 4 seconds as Mahalia Jackson.
Yeah.
But her presence is always welcome in everything she's been. And she's been one of those, oh, wait, I like her faces. Mm.
Yes.
Every time she pops up in anything. And it's great to see her getting her moment. This is a marvelous performance. And she's so, so crucial to that film.
Yeah. I will mention there are a couple of other performances in here that, again, are not necessarily movies that are big in the Oscar conversation. But these performances I want to shout out. Danielle Brooks in The Color Purple, I think, is wonderful. Danielle Brooks is another person I'm always happy to see, no matter what it is.
Yes.
I was happy to see her. She did like some home renovation show. And I was like, oh, cool. Danielle Brooks, I'm totally going to watch this home renovation show. I really liked America Ferrera in Barbie, and I'm so delighted for kind of the arc of her career post Ugly Betty and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Jodie Foster was pretty much the thing I most liked about Naiad, a movie that I did not care for that much, but I think she found a real kind of depth to this somewhat thankless role in the sense that you keep wondering why this woman is putting up with her best friend.
It's kind of thankless in every way, right? Like the character in the film has a thankless role.
Yeah.
And she's Jodie Foster. I mean, she's putting layer on layer on layer in every scene she's doing.
I think she's excellent in that movie. And the only reason why I don't add Emily Blunt to this list is that I think her role in Oppenheimer is not written all that strongly or interestingly. But this is another really powerful category, and I don't want the fact that we all kind of agree on should and will win to kind of wash away the fact that there are some really good performances in this category.
Uh-huh.
We are at our final category today, which is actor in a supporting role. Stephen, who is up in this category?
All right, we've got Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction. Brown plays Cliff, the estranged brother of writer Thelonious Monk Ellison. Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon. De Niro plays William Hale, a corrupt, wealthy man who manipulates the Osage tribe for their wealth. Ryan Gosling for Barbie. Gosling plays a naive Ken whose main job is beach. When he discovers the patriarchy, he goes off the rails and embarking on a quest for justice for all Kens. Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. Ruffalo plays Duncan Wedderburn, a hilariously sleazy lawyer who runs away with protagonist Bella. And Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer. Downey Jr. plays Louis Strauss, who becomes a political nemesis of J. Robert Oppenheimer.
We need a systematic destruction of Oppenheimer's credibility so he can never again speak on matters of national security.
We are all in agreement, as it turns out, about who is going to win in this category. This is another one where the precursor awards have pretty much gone in the same direction. And that is, we are all predicting that Robert Downey Jr. is likely to win for playing Louis Strauss in Oppenheimer.
Yes.
Glenn, how do you, what makes you think that he's going to win other than
the buzz?
Is it precursor awards exclusively, or is it other things?
No, you can make an argument here because, like, Robert Downey Jr. as a performer, as a person, has a certain charm, which if you don't like, you call smarm. Mm. In this movie, he channels that charm smarm in a different way than he channeled it for Tony Stark. This character he's playing turns out to be a creature of envy and spite, but you can't show that, you know, at the top.
Mm-hmm.
The character of Oppenheimer has to trust him, has to get to like him. So we have him channeling it, that charm and smarm, into seeming affable, like a guy who's got your back until his sudden but inevitable betrayal. You can make an argument for this performance, and I think people will.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, this was the boring part of the movie, I have to say. Like, when we were with Oppenheimer building the bomb, I thought the movie was very interesting when it was dealing with kind of the inner workings of scientists. Whenever we were kind of with the black and white film and the Congress people and all the sort of machinations, that was when I was a little bit bored.
Yeah.
I actually think Robert Downey Jr. should have been nominated for playing Tony Stark. I think he's a really good actor. He's one of my favorite actors. And I think he's been doing spectacular work for many, many years. And it's weird to me that this is a performance that's gotten so much more recognition than a lot of his other performances, because I didn't care about this performance very much, I have to tell you the truth.
Sure.
But the interesting thing is, we are all also in agreement about who should win in this category. And rather than take you all through another agonizing round of 1, 2, 3, go, we are going to introduce who we all said should win in this category with a clip. Stephen, you and I talked a little bit about this when we spoke about original song, but tell me your fondness for this Ryan Gosling performance.
Oh, man. I mean, this is such a wonderful, rich, strangely nuanced, and just extremely memorable performance. Mm-hmm. Ever since the very first still dropped of Ryan Gosling as Ken, I was transfixed by this performance. And nothing about the performance and nothing about the film ever dissuaded me from that excitement. I don't want to dump on Robert Downey Jr., who I agree with both Linda and Glenn that Downey gives an excellent performance. But it's really interesting. Gosling and De Niro and Sterling K. Brown and Mark Ruffalo are bringing so much energy and so much verve and so much charisma to their performances that I kind of would prefer any of the four to the Downey performance that I think is going to win. Mm. And which is not to dump on Downey at all. I love him. I agree with everything Linda said about he should have been nominated for Tony Stark. I just think it is the least exciting performance in this field. And the most exciting performance in this field is by Gosling, who is just, even when he's a monster in the film, you cannot take your eyes off him.
I think for me, what I love the most about this performance is the fact that it's a comedic performance. And exactly. We do not see enough of that happening. Yeah. You know, look, I've had small little crush on Ryan Gosling ever since he was on the MMC, Mickey Mouse Club, back in the day.
Wow.
The fact that he...
You are a hipster Ryan Gosling person.
Yes. All of those years he spent toiling away on that show, performing Jodeci songs, have now paid off. I hope that he takes this because he's just so effervescent. And I'm going to say it, he is... like the best written character in that movie, I think. And that's no shade to Margot Robbie, who I think is doing so many layered things in that film. And it's the kind of performance you have to like go back and rewatch to sort of catch all those nuances. You might miss them the first time because of all the Ken-ness of it all. Mm-hmm. But my goodness, like he is a star, and this is a star cementing performance, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I'm voting for him mostly on principle because we got to get a comedy into the Oscars. And the only way, historically, the only way we get a comedy into the Oscars is through this backdoor service entrance with the supporting performances. And I would push back a little bit, Aisha, because I think he should win for this comedy performance because on paper, Ken is kind of one note, but that performance is rooted in the specifics of a very specific kind of wounded male ego, like the wounded male egos that ended up hating the movie. So I think he's onto something there.
I guess I can see that. I guess maybe it's just it feels like he has more screen time than most of the other characters. And whether that's true or not, I don't know. But yes, you're right. It does really come down to that performance at the end of the day.
And again, what a lineup of actors that I have loved in so many things.
Yeah.
You know, I am a huge fan of Robert De Niro, especially when he's not just kind of doing the Robert De Niro thing.
When
he's not just grumpy old Robert De Niro.
This is not
a phoned-in performance.
I think that's great to see. I've never seen Mark Ruffalo be this purely comedic.
Exactly.
Because if you wanted to go comedic, you could also go with Ruffalo.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
The movie's kind of a balance, but he's pretty much 100% buffoon in this. And I loved that. And listen, Downey's going to win. I didn't love that performance or that part of the movie, but I love him and I will be thrilled to see him win. So this is a full slate of people who are great, who I love. No matter what happens, I'm a happy lady. Mm-hmm. As we said at the beginning, it's a good run of nominees. Very few duds.
Largely dudless.
Yeah, there is no Bohemian Rhapsody in this field.
Oh, now see, you're just trolling Shots now. Fired. You're just asking for hate mail. Well, we obviously can't get to every Oscars category today. Check out our feed for episodes where we have guides for other categories: original song, documentary feature, international feature. And on Sunday night during the Oscars telecast, watch along with us. We'll be live blogging at npr.org. And on Monday, of course, we will have a recap of the telecast right here in your podcast feed. Thanks to our tireless producers who will be tired. We want to know what you think about this year's Oscar nominees. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH. Up next, what's making us happy this week?
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
Now it's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, what's making us happy this week. Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week kicks off.
Eurovision is coming, people. Prepare the way. You've only got a couple months. Get right with the Lord. The best way to prepare is to listen to a new podcast called Eurovangelists. It's on the Max Fun Network. The three hosts, two of them I knew and love from other places, Oscar Montoya from Dimension 20 and Minx and the Drag Her podcast, Jeremy Bent from the Mission to Zix podcast, which I've mentioned before. I didn't know Dimitri Pompei before this, but I'm a fan of him now. This podcast is on one level Eurovision 101. Here's what you need to know. But if it was just that, I'd still recommend it to people, but I probably wouldn't keep listening because I'm kind of good on the basics. It is a lot more than that. It's enthusiasts enthusing with sincerity, abject sincerity, but in a knowing kind of way, a knowing sincerity. And that's the Eurovision formula. That's what you got to do. They're smart. They're funny. They're walking you through week by week the songs that even now, right now, each Eurovision country is nominating for the finals coming up in May. They're sharing why they love this ridiculous spectacle without even a trace amount of gatekeeping. Everything about the podcast is specifically pitched to invite you to love Eurovision as much as they do, as much as I do. That is the, can I just say, perfectly titled, by the way, Eurovangelists podcast, available wherever you get podcasts.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon, Eurovangelists. Aisha Harris, what is making you happy this week?
That is the theme song to Strangers with Candy that has been stuck in my head for the last few weeks because I am doing a rewatch of this show. Hadn't really watched it since at least like 15 years. But of course, this is the Comedy Central series that ran for three seasons beginning in 1999. It's created by a bunch of Second City alumni, including Stephen Colbert, Amy Sedaris, and Paul DiNello. Inspired by cheesy after-school specials and PSAs, and Sedaris stars as Jerry Blank, a former sex worker and drug addict who spent years as a, quote, boozer, a user, and a loser, and she returns to high school as a 46-year-old freshman. This show is surreal, definitely not PC. Jerry's a full-on unapologetic racist with a Confederate flag on her bedroom wall, but my God, it still hits. I very much enjoy it. So, yeah, I'm just having a really fun time rediscovering Strangers with Candy, which you can find on Paramount Plus.
All right. Thank you very much, Aisha Harris. Strangers with Candy. Steve and Boom Boom Thompson. What is making you happy this week?
Wow. What is making me happy this week is a wonderful documentary called My Name is Pauli Murray. Pauli is spelled P-A-U-L-I. Pauli Murray is a fascinating figure I did not know nearly enough about. So Pauli Murray was like a generation ahead on so many issues. Pauli Murray ran into trouble when Pauli Murray refused to sit in the back of the bus in 1940, many years ahead of Rosa Parks. Pauli Murray's writings were extremely influential on, among others, Thurgood Marshall and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You can run down a list of things that are fascinating about Pauli Murray. There are enough to fill a fascinating documentary that is really warmly told, where you get to see the subject speak. You're getting a lot of thoughts on the writing. I was really transfixed by this film, and for as many Black history courses as I took in college, and as many films as I've seen, and as many TV shows as I've watched, this was really illuminating a story that I had not heard told very much at all. And I highly, highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. So that is My Name is Pauli Murray. That is streaming on Amazon Prime, and it should be noted, Amazon supports NPR and pays to distribute some of our content.
All right. Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Friend of the show, Priya Krishna, has a series on the New York Times cooking YouTube channel in which she investigates different jobs within the world of food. I think they're all in New York City. And she's done things like, you know, she's visited a school cafeteria. She's visited a laundry where they wash linens for restaurants. And the most recent installment as we record this is about a dishwasher in a fine dining restaurant. She follows him throughout the day to look into the complexities of that job and how critical it is to keeping the restaurant running. And if you expect this to sort of be like, oh, the terrible hard life of a dishwasher, it's not that. It's about the skilled labor that he's doing and how important he is to the organization of the place. I recommended this video. And the other reason I recommended it is best explained by the great Jamel Bowie, who commented to me, I'm watching this right now, and Dre is the dishwasher. I'm watching this right now, and Dre has otherworldly levels of riz, which is absolutely true. This dishwasher is the most engaging, charismatic, absolutely transfixing guy. And I loved watching him. It gets into kind of what his aspirations are. Priya does such a good job with this series. It's work that I really genuinely don't see a lot of other people doing. So the series is called On the Job. It's on the New York Times Cooking Channel. And this is the dishwasher in a fine dining restaurant installment. And I absolutely love it. And it makes me happy every single time I see a new one come out. That is what is making me happy this week. If you want links for what we recommended, plus some more recommendations, sign up for our newsletter. It's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. That brings us to the end of our Oscars show. Glenn Weldon, Aisha Harris, Stephen Thompson, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
This episode was produced by Hafsa Fathima and Mike Katziff and edited by Jessica Reedy. And by the way, all through Oscar season, all of our producers are absolutely critical to every single thing that we do. And Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you next week when we'll be recapping, guess what, the Oscars.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch. This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
The Indicator from Planet Money is a daily podcast that helps you make sense of what's happening in the economy. And video games are a growing slice of that economy, with billions of people around the world identifying as gamers. That's why we're dedicating a week-long series to the growing business of video games. Listen to the Indicator from Planet Money podcast on NPR.